Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Did you know that the distance between Boston, Massachusetts and Atlanta, Georgia is roughly 1,100 miles? But if you ask EPA Administrators David Cash and Daniel Blackman, I think they might say that the distance might as well be zero. Because that's because when it comes to fighting climate change and protecting the environment, they might argue that it is just as much about regional efforts as it is about local ones. And for this year's Earth Week, that holistic approach has brought Daniel Blackman to Boston for today and tomorrow to listen and learn and collaborate. Now, both David Cash, who is the EPA Administrator for Region 1 here in New England, and Daniel Blackman, the EPA Administrator for Region 4, which also represents southern states like North and South Carolina, Florida, and Kentucky, they're both here in Studio 2. To talk more with us about that. David Cash, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks. Great to be here.
And Daniel Blackman, welcome to Radio Boston.
Great to be here, especially since I was born in Boston, so I'm excited.
Oh, you were?
Yes,
where,
ma'am.
In Boston?
In Dorchester. So, I mean, I've got family in Roxbury, Mattapan, and good to be home, far away from my current home, but happy to be back in Boston.
Okay, well, that blows my whole first question, which was like, how are you finding Boston?
Depends if you ask me after my aunts cook for me tonight. But
what are they cooking, do you know?
Well, I have Caribbean family, so they're from Barbados. I'm not going to ask. I'm just going to comply and show up.
There you go. Fantastic. Well, welcome home.
Thank you.
So it's great to have the two of you together. What made you decide to come together here in Boston during Earth Week? And David Cash, I'll start with you. Did you put out an invitation? How did this happen?
Yeah, so Administrator Blackman and I have been talking about this for months. There's, as you noted at the beginning, our regional efforts are trying to tackle some of the most important environmental and climate justice problems that we have today, leveraging incredible resources that we've gotten from Congress on the order of $110 billion to lift up low-income, disadvantaged communities and right wrongs that have persisted for decades. And we have a lot to learn from one another. There's so much I can learn from what Administrator Blackman and his staff do in the southern states, and I'm hoping it's the same this way. And it's just this is a celebratory week. There's so much that the Biden and Harris administration is doing to advance these causes. It's a time for us to both celebrate and learn from one another.
So let's pick up on two of those threads. Daniel Blackman, what are two of the wrongs that are most important to try to right with that money?
Well, I think first and foremost, the bipartisan infrastructure law is very adamant about what's considered as Justice 40, making sure underserved communities are prioritized, communities that have been left out of that conversation. And too often, not just in our region, but around the country, we have so many communities that have been left out of that conversation, out of the investment, out of the, you know, seat at the table. And one of the reasons I'm here with Dr. Cash is to make sure that we, one, learn from each other's regions, but two, we build an infrastructure that will last well beyond our service, the United States Environmental Protection Agency. But uniquely, in Region 4, 56% of the nation's historically black colleges are in those areas. And we have some very historic opportunities since the announcement with EPA of the Office of Environmental Justice and External Civil Rights. So I think our uniqueness to the southern states in the U.S. and the civil rights impact, the disparities, but what Dr. Cash just mentioned about the investments behind environmental justice and infrastructure, it's absolutely critical for both of us to be here, to be on the same page, but to make sure our regions learn from each other.
So, David Cash, we've heard this word infrastructure three or four times now. I was going to say no pun intended, but now that it's occurred to me, I will say pun intended. Get concrete about what infrastructure you're talking about. What are we talking about when we say infrastructure?
Yeah,
here?
So there are a wide range of things to right these wrongs. And all you need to do is look at some of the data where, black children are two times more likely than white children to have asthma, that, a quarter of black and Hispanic Americans live within 3 miles of a Superfund site. So the investments that we're going to make are things like getting out lead pipes. We know that lead pipes are also in these same communities. So there's billions of dollars in the bipartisan infrastructure law. And the goal of the Biden-Harris administration is to get all those lead pipes out in the next 10 years. Huge and ambitious. But when you think about when you're a parent turning on the tap and you're worried what your kid is drinking, That's not the country that we want to be in. So that's one of the kind of infrastructure investments, but we could talk about electric vehicles and electric charging and ductless mini splits if you want to get technical to bring cool air and warm air to people's homes much cheaper, solar, wind, all of those kinds of things are infrastructure that we're going to be investing in.
So do pick another one, Daniel Blackman, and I'll note, just because I enjoy it when themes run through, we're going to talk about electricity in the second part of this show. Mm-hmm. Clean water is going to come up in the third part of this show, so it's going to run all through. But pick another piece of infrastructure, Daniel Blackman, that in your region, Region 4, is another piece that you're counting on or feels particularly necessary to you.
Well, as a, you know, obviously I'm an adult now, but as a child, I grew up with asthma. And the fact that 25 million children depend on school buses each and every day, we have $5 billion committed through the Clean School Bus Program, where we are literally converting our diesel emission buses to clean school buses. That is a game changer. When the fact that schools in these districts can have an impact that I think is extraordinarily important for us to protect the lungs of our most vulnerable populations, it's critical. When you look at during the pandemic, most black and brown communities suffered adversely after COVID because of pre-existing respiratory illnesses. So when you think of black and brown communities, when you think of poor communities, rural, regardless of race, these communities have been unfortunately impacted. And I'll give you a really quick example. In the state of Georgia, we have 181 school districts. 141 of those school districts have populations of 25% or higher of children that live at or below the poverty line. So when you think of the amount of school districts that are impacted already by poverty that can now benefit from clean school buses in states like Georgia and South Carolina and Alabama and states around the country, quite frankly, we're really excited about that because we allow fleets of entire school districts to get to upgrade their buses and to build a more clean and resilient future, not just for our society, not just for our democracy, but for our children. And our most valuable assets, I think we would all agree, are our children and our grandchildren and those individuals in our communities that they play with. Outside of that, there's a lot of issues we'll touch on today, but I think the Clean School Bus Program and really making our funding accessible. David and I will talk a lot about funding from EPA, a lot about resources, but we have to make sure that there are pipelines and accessibility that don't leave people out of those resources and out of those conversations.
We're having a conversation with two regional EPA administrators here in Studio 2 on Radio Boston. We have David Cash, who is ours here for Region 1 in New England, and visiting us is Daniel Blackman, who's the EPA administrator for Region 4 in the South. So I'm going to pick up on this asthma thread a little bit. A couple of weeks ago, we were talking about the Health Equity Compact here mm-hmm. in Massachusetts. Springfield, we were talking about a state representative from Springfield, which has one of the highest asthma rates here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. David Cash, early in this conversation, you said, I think we have a lot to learn mm-hmm. from Daniel Blackman, from, you know, the Region 4. This is a place where we see some commonality, right? Mm-hmm. So in this hunger, in this moment to learn, what are the questions you're asking? You know, again, I'll come back to this concrete example. What are some of the key questions that regional administrators can ask each other in this moment? We're talking incredible amounts of money on the table. It's going to get spent. It can get spent well or not, yeah. right? So what do you ask?
Yeah, so one of the questions is what Regional Administrator Blackman and his team bring to the table that I'm really interested in learning more about is there's a long, long history out of the Atlanta office in engaging with communities, environmental justice communities, which, you know, you can argue that the environmental justice movement started in the South as a kind of offshoot of the civil rights movement. And there's a lot for us to learn in how to engage communities. You know, we're a federal agency, and we don't have a lot of practice in that. There's certainly folks on our team who've been doing that for years, but we need to ramp this up to a degree that has never happened before. And so we want to learn how to do that because, as the regional administrator said, there's so much funding coming out, and we have to figure out how to bring the communities on board, raise their capacity so they can even apply for federal funding. I mean, it's a complicated business. And so that's one of the suite of things that I want to learn from him and his team.
What about reverse questions, Daniel Blackman?
Same thing. I think that, you know, first of all, what you should know is that Dr. Cash and I have a great relationship outside of our work. So it's easy to be here and it's easy to learn from him. I think for us, more than anything else, is really taking on those questions that hit the hardest as it relates to economic disparity, race disparity. You know, this administration has not been afraid of the DEI a question. You know, when we think of diversity, equity, and inclusion, we're not here to check the box. So we want to learn regionally what's working and where can we be better. I am very proud of our boss, Administrator Michael Regan, in launching the Journey to Justice in Region 4. The Journey to Justice was basically an opportunity for our administrator and the regional administrators in these respective areas to go out and go into the communities. So while it's great to be in this room, it's great to be in our offices, Dr. Cash and I are on the road and we're out. I mean, as a matter of fact, we just left his office and he has a map that has little flags of all the areas he's been to. And I think the best word I can use for us is accountability. What we want to learn being in Boston is how has progress been made? What are some of the hurdles that exist? And quite frankly, what are you doing right? Because look, let's be honest, there are 10 EPA regions. Every region is unique. They're not going to be completely the same. But the audiences that we engage, the conversations that we have, whether they are EPA friendly or they're adversarial, we have to do a better job of being accountable and working with the community. And that includes bringing them to the table each and every day. And if they're doing something right here in Dr. Cash's region that's working, we want to replicate it and not reinvent the wheel.
So many questions I could ask. I want to leave just a minute to talk about Earth Day and Earth Week. But David Cash, before we do that, one thing that is on my mind is the concentrated focus that our new governor here in Massachusetts, Maura Healey, has put on creating an infrastructure in the state to be competitive for receiving and executing on federal dollars.
Exactly.
What role does that play in both the learning environment that the two of you are talking about and in this idea of being able to apply for, get, and execute well on big amounts of money that are coming in?
A huge amount. So, for example, it was just announced recently that each state would be getting, if they choose, a block grant of $3 million to do climate planning. And once the states have done that, that'll open the door to another $4.5 billion, billion with a B, that comes from the Inflation Reduction Act. Obviously, states are going to know their economy, their electric grid, their transportation systems better than we ever will. So there's a long, long history in partnering with the states, whether it's on the regulatory or enforcement side. And here we're going to do so much partnering on the investment side. You know, they're going to know, the states are going to know where the districts are that have the highest level of asthma. They're going to know the districts that have worked as partners. They're going to know the districts that have not worked as partners in the past that we're trying to target. So, you know, there's a transformative moment where this money is going to assist with the partnerships that we have with states so we can invest, as you said earlier, to have the, you know, the most effectiveness that we possibly can to have the biggest impact in these communities. And there's another piece about this, because it's not just about reducing asthma. It's about the benefits of the clean energy future, which are also jobs. And if we think about the IT boom and the pharma boom, those all bypassed these low-income and disadvantaged communities. This time we have an opportunity to get it right. So we're talking about workforce development where students in these same schools that Administrator Blackmun is talking about are going to learn how to maintain school buses, are going to learn how to install the new kind of infrastructure for the future. So lots of benefits working with the states in that regard.
All right, last question to you, Daniel Blackmun. The best way to do justice to, I mean, our first Earth Day 53 years ago this week, best way to do justice to it now?
I think listening to understand and not just to respond. Going into communities and letting them know that they are fundamentally a part of this conversation. Too often, and you know, really quickly to touch on what you just asked, Dr. Cash, the relationships that we have with our states, our local and federal partners are absolutely critical. That's why making sure we prioritize those conversations are critical. And when you think of where we are with Earth Day, there's a lot of distrust, right? And one thing that I think that this administration has recognized is, you know, we're going to acknowledge areas that we need to improve upon. And the Biden-Harris administration, along with our offices in D.C., with EPA, have committed us to being in rooms that are not always the easiest rooms. I think when I think of Earth Day, I don't think of a region. I don't think of a city. I don't think of a community or a specific culture. I think of a whole of government and a whole of community approach to making sure that we set the next generation up in communities that have been, again, left behind, disadvantaged, or underserved. Building the capacity for a bigger tent makes it a lot easier for us to not only celebrate Earth Day, but make measurable progress.
All right. Daniel Blackmun is the EPA Administrator for Region 4 in the South, but son of Dorchester. And David Cash is EPA Administrator for Region 1 here in New England. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thank you so much.
And now a bit of a preview.
I'm Darryl C. Murphy, and you're listening to The Common. In case you haven't heard, it's Earth Week. And to celebrate, we're going to be doing something a little different. Each day this week, we'll bring you a different story from around Greater Boston about how climate change is already being felt across the region.
And we want to find out more about that now. So here to give us a preview of that coverage, Darryl C. Murphy. Hey there, Darryl.
Hey, hey, hey.
Thanks for joining us. So the major theme or focus overall coverage, climate change, already in progress. We just heard a little bit about what's happening around the EPA there. Why did you want to do a week on it this week?
Well, to be honest, we wanted to do some kind of series, and our producer, Caitlin Harrop, suggested that we go around the city and see how climate change is impacting the different neighborhoods, and so here we are.
So tell us a little bit about what we can expect.
Well, let's see. Monday, we had our show about microgrids in Chinatown. Yesterday, we had a show about erosion in the Boston Harbor Islands. And today we have our show is airing about Crane Ledge Woods. There's a fight to preserve a big parcel of land that's apparently the largest unprotected urban wild in the city. And then tomorrow we're going to be talking about heat through the lens of the South End, you know, being that Boston itself is a heat island. We're going to be talking about certain areas of the city that get hotter than others. And then Friday we are going to close it out with some Earth Week activities.
So what's the story that you are most excited for people to hear, Darryl?
Oh, man. They're all really good and eye-opening. I think for me, the story that I found really interesting was the Boston Harbor Islands. Just being out, we boarded a boat, and we went out there with researchers and experts and a park ranger, and we looked at all these different islands to see how rising sea levels and stronger storms and these big storm surges are leading to erosion of these islands that really like kind of protect us from big waves crashing into Boston, right, and other communities in the area. So that was really eye-opening, and just being really in it, right? On the water, we saw seals and stuff like that. It was cool. You know, it was such a cool day, but very, very enlightening for me.
I actually kind of feel like I can smell it, see it, yep, hear it just from you talking about it.
Yep. It was awesome.
So is there any story or topic that you want to cover in the future that came out of your reporting from this week?
Yes. Right now, like I said, tomorrow we have a show coming out about extreme heat. Being that Boston gets very hot in the summer, you know, particularly during heat waves. And, you know, there's parts of the city like Chinatown. We're focused on the South End, but like there's that whole section of the city that's just so developed with little green space and tree canopy and stuff like that. So it gets really, really hot in a city that's already hot, you know?
Yep.
And so I am interested to do more reporting on how that impacts people, because heat is serious, man. It will take you out, literally, you know?
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of communities that are quote unquote vulnerable, you know, and who to heat, you know? So I really would like to do more to get those experiences.
All right, Darryl, tell us where people can find and listen to the Commons coverage of Earth Week this week.
Well, you can go to WBUR.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Darryl C. Murphy, host of WBUR's The Common, and just for the record, awesome colleague. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.